Well, thank you, Mr. Song Leader. Good afternoon, everyone. With a heavy heart today, I miss my friend and fellow spiritual warrior, Charlie. He ran his race. He endured to the end. We will all miss him. In my childhood, I had many emotional and mental experiences, and of course that's happened to all of us. One experience that had the capacity for spiritual damage in my early teenage years happened with some older neighborhood boys who were my friends. They occasionally allowed me to tag along with them to a risque magazine store in Richmond, Indiana. There all of us would examine and mentally indulge in magazines full of pictures of practically nude, beautiful women. The overinterest in the bodies of women introduced to me that early in my life affected me negatively for most of the rest of my life. Fortunately, nowadays, when a beautiful woman with a shapely body comes into view, I hardly even notice. Yeah, sure. Right. By the way, who's that pretty blonde sitting back there at that table with the fancy hat? I have another question. Is gambling a sin? That pretty blonde back there is my wife, Tammy. And she is a world-class gambler because on March 30th, 2008, she rolled the dice, and took a chance, and married me. Anyway, perhaps in the late 1980s, Worldwide Church of God had a big combined service in Columbus, Ohio, with our new pastor general. Somehow, by a very odd event, I got to see just a few seconds of the angry and furious side of this new pastor general. The short version of the story is that with all good intentions, I accidentally caused this event of his fury and his anger to happen. I hate to admit it, but in early decades of my life, mainly because of frustration, I often would become angry and become a furious man myself. I had been forced to be around some angry and furious men during my early years, and that type of behavior had been passed on to me. Anyway, getting back to the pastor general story, within a few minutes I realized right there on the spot that I did not have to be around this particular angry and furious man. I got into my car, drove away that day, and never came back to Worldwide Church of God. Just a note, nobody ever contacted me, not one, when I didn't show up. And I think that said more about me, probably, than them. I had been spiritually called into Worldwide Church of God in the early 1980s, and my approach to it, with all my excitement and zeal, had driven away, out of my life, my good Catholic wife. That led to the chain of events where my children, my home, and the job that I had at that time were all gone. And now finally, a few years later, my church was gone too. This was the steady continuing of the Job period of time in my life. At that period of time in my life, I felt that death would have been my friend. Anyway, by some miracle, I managed to go forward what was left out of this failed life of mine. In the early 2000s, between my trucking job in Dayton, Ohio, and helping my parents on their farm in Richmond, Indiana, I found myself dating a woman from Wapakoneta, Ohio, just for some excitement and fun. I knew that I would never marry this woman, and I was straight up with her right from the beginning that if we kept dating, going over the cliff, so to speak, was physically out. Months earlier, I had indulged in fornication on two separate sessions with two other women, and I'd sworn to myself that that would not happen again. I soon discovered that this particular woman and I were on the same page concerning our dating, and we were having fun and excitement going over the line without going over the cliff, so to speak. One evening, we wound up at her son and or daughter's home for a family gathering, and I'll just tell you the story. I found a comfortable chair, and her probably 4-year-old granddaughter came over to me carrying her storybook, climbed up on my lap, took a look at me, and said, "Would you read me my little book?" I said, "Well, sure, honey, I'll read your book." And so I read it cover to cover and handed it back to her. She looked up at me and she said, "Are you going to be with us forever?" And I said, "Well, honey," I lied. I said, "Honey, I just don't know. I don't know." But I knew. I knew. By the next day, the light bulb had come on inside my mind, and I said to myself, "Now I finally get it. Now I see how coveting and practicing sinful human romantic activity hurts our relationship with God, and it hurts too many people." Let me say this again. Coveting, adultery, fornication, consenting adults, experimenting in pre-marriage, over the line, physical romance in any way, it hurts our relationship with God, it hurts ourselves, and it hurts too many other people. I vowed to myself to stop the over-the-line, covetous, sinful, romantic games forever. Spiritually, at that time, I felt myself getting weaker and weaker, and it scared me. So I started seriously searching for a church that I could attend as a visitor, even if I was only going to attend services at that church 3 particular times per year. I wanted to honor God at least that much. And the church that I was going to attend would have to be a Christian church founded on God's love that observed God's Sabbath and holy days. The short version, rest of the story is, if you find me to be rather annoying in any way, or find me to be a regular pain in the backside in any way, don't blame me, blame yourselves. God miraculously brought me here to be with all of you. I guess my actual being here with all of you since the mid-2000s, the Dayton branch of the United Church of God, could possibly be your penalty from God for slacking off and not praying and fasting hard enough at the time when I was looking for a church. Anyway, the title of this split sermon is Coveting and Sinning in Physical Intimacy Can Lead to Very Damaging and Dangerous Things. Let's go to Acts 13:22. Acts 13:22. "And when he had removed him," and that would have been Saul, "he raised up for them David as king, to whom he also gave testimony and said, 'I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will.'" We don't have to go there, but the phrase, "a man after his own heart," is written in 1 Samuel 13:14. 1 Samuel 13:14. Now let's go to Matthew 1:6. Matthew 1:6. Caption written by the publishers of my Bible has genealogy of Jesus through Solomon and foster father Joseph. And verse 6, Jesse begot David the king. David the king begot Solomon by her who had been the wife of Uriah. Do you see a problem here? It says by her who had been the wife of Uriah. It's sort of like a big neon sign right here in the middle of all this genealogy. So what happened? Let's go to 2 Samuel 11:1. That's 2 Samuel 11:1. It happened in the spring of the year, at the time when kings go out to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all of Israel, and they destroyed the people of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. But David remained at Jerusalem. I have some notes here from when I attended ABC. I guess David was about 50 years old. David had some time on his hands. David had drifted away from God at that time. And if you check back in 2 Samuel 23:39, you would find that he was no less of rank than 37th in the top officers in David's army. He probably knew Uriah and Bathsheba. Also, LearnReligions.com had something to say about kings. Limited polygamy, that's one man married to more than one woman, was permitted during this era of Israel's history. GotQuestions.org said that the Bible lists David as having 8 wives by name, and he probably had more wives than 8. And I'll not go there, but in Deuteronomy 17:17, there's a caption in my Bible that says things concerning a king. Deuteronomy 17:17. Neither shall he multiply wives for himself, lest his heart turn away. Interesting. Now, let's stay in 2 Samuel 11, verse 2. Verse 2. It happened one evening that David arose from his bed and walked on the roof of the king's house. And from the roof he saw a woman bathing. The woman was very beautiful to behold. I have one word to say right here. Coveting. Now let's go to 3 and 4. Verses 3 and 4. So David sent and inquired about the woman. And someone said, "Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" Then David sent messengers and took her. She came to him. He lay with her, for she was cleansed from her impurity, and she returned to her house. I have 4 more words here. Stealing, adultery, dishonoring parents. I want to step aside here for just a moment and mention that Tammy was able to provide me with 3 good commentaries. If any of you are interested in looking, I have all 3 of them with me today. And 2 Samuel 11 is marked with post-it notes in each one. The first one is the Flavius Josephus book of historical works, and that one is good. The second one is Jameson, Fawcett and Brown's commentary, and I think that it covered 2 Samuel 11 and 12 and 13 very well. It did mention that Bathsheba was a woman of renowned, celebrated beauty in David's kingdom. The third one is the Wycliffe Bible commentary, and I now want to read out of that one. Although David is held responsible for the sin, Bathsheba was not without blame. She came at his request seemingly without hesitation and offered no resistance to his desires, at least as far as the record is concerned. The fact that she was bathing in the uncovered court of a house in the heart of a city into which anyone could look down from the roofs of the neighboring houses or from higher ground does not say much for her modesty, even if she had no ulterior motive, as some commentators suggest. However, this does not excuse David from the enormity of his transgression against the Lord's statutes and one of his top fighting men. Back to 2 Samuel 11, verse 5. And the woman conceived, so she sent and told David and said, I am with child. Now both of them have a big problem, and the question is, how is David going to handle this problem? I would just try to give an overview of verses 6 through 26. And I have another word for us right now. Lying. David comes up with a plan A. Plan A is that he has Uriah the Hittite come over to his house. He asks how the battle is going. He gives him food and comfort, things he needs. He says, go home for a night or two and just be with your wife, enjoy your wife. It turns out that Uriah is a man of integrity and a good example to his men back in the battlefield. Uriah slept with David's servants and did not go home. So David comes up with a plan B. He invites him back over in the evening, have a little food and a lot of strong drink. And he said, again, he said, go home and you deserve a break. You've earned this. Be with your wife. And possibly even drunk, Uriah again chooses to spend the night with David's servants. Finally, David puts together plan C, and this plan works. He sends him back to Joab, has sealed orders for Joab to put him in the hottest part of the battle and take support away from him so he'll get killed. And that's what happens. Uriah is killed in the battle. And Bathsheba has mourned when she finds out that her husband is gone. I have two more words for us here. Premeditated murder. Does Exodus 20 ring a bell for anyone here? I now want to read 2 Samuel 11, verse 27, for it is a key verse. Verse 27. And I'll read it the Ambassador Bible College way that you might read it. And when her mourning was over, David sent and harvested her to his house, and she became his wife and bore him a son. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. We learned at ABC, and there's things said here and not said here. It does not say the thing that David and Bathsheba had done displeased the Lord. It says the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. God places strict judgment on his leaders. We who have made the promises to God and went under the water are to become the very transformed and pure spiritual bride of Jesus Christ. We are leaders. Never forget that we are continually being tested and continually being strictly judged by the Father. In 2 Samuel 12, 1 through 6, 2 Samuel 12, 1 through 6. God sends Nathan the prophet to David with a situation that needs a judgment. Then the Lord sent Nathan to David, and he came to him and he said to him, "There were two men in one city, one rich, the other poor. The rich man had exceedingly many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb which he had bought and nourished, and it grew up together with him and with his children. It ate of his own food and drank from his own cup and lay in his bosom, and it was like a daughter to him. Then a traveler came to the rich man who refused to take from him his own flock and from his own herd to prepare one for the wayfaring man who had come to him. But he took the poor man's lamb and prepared it for the man who had come to him. So David's anger was greatly aroused against the man, and he said to Nathan, "As the Lord lives, the man who has done this shall surely die. And he shall restore fourfold for the lamb because he did this thing and because he had no pity." It is interesting that David said the word fourfold. And if my information is correct, counting the death of David and Bathsheba's firstborn, four of David's sons had premature deaths. In verse 7, Nathan simply says, "You are the man." The rest of 2 Samuel 12 makes manifest God's anger and the penalties that God is going to pour out upon the house of David. I'll read one more thing from the Wycliffe commentary. Sin has two results. It separates a man from God, and it produces evil effects in the world. The first of these can be canceled by God's forgiveness, but the second remains. The tragedy of human history is that the evil effects of sin are not always nor wholly borne by the sinner himself. Coveting and sinning and physical intimacy can lead to very damaging and dangerous things. At a later time, study the events that are in 2 Samuel 13. 2 Samuel 13. A son of David, Ammon, coveting the body of his half-sister, Tamar, will cause tragedy for himself, Tamar, and many others in David's family. I'll just read Hebrews 11, 24 and 25. Hebrews 11, 24 and 25. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, but choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Passing pleasures of sin. Someone must ask, how long will men take pleasure in sin? Well, men aren't the only ones who take pleasure in sin. Let's go to Proverbs 7. Proverbs 7. I'll just read it all. The snare of unchastity. My son, keep my words and treasure my commands within you. Keep my commands and live, and my law as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, "You are my sister," and call understanding your nearest kin, that they may keep you from the immoral woman, the seductress who flatters with her words. For at the window of my house, I looked through the lattice, and I saw among the simple, I perceived among the youths, a young man devoid of understanding, passing along the street near her corner. And he took the path to her house, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark of night. And there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent face, she said to him, I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows. So I came out to meet you diligently to seek your face, and I have found you. I have spread my bed with tapestry, colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love, for my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him, and he will come home on the appointed day. With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately he went after her, as an ox goes to the slaughter, or a fool to the correction of the stocks, until an arrow struck his liver. As a bird hastens to the snare, he did not know it would cost him his life. Now, therefore, listen to me, my children. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths, for she has cast down many wounded, and all who were slain by her were strong men. Her house is the way to hell, the grave, descending to the chambers of death. In this modern world today, you can find millions of children, men, women, and families who are under a multitude of mental, emotional, or physical torments because human beings chose to play sinful romantic games with each other. In closing, I want to go to 1 John 2:15 and 17 through 17 to 1 John 2:15 through 17. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. Coveting and sinning in physical intimacy can lead to very damaging and dangerous things.